You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFMLP 103.3 Asheville. It's 9 o'clock on Wednesday, June 3rd, and you're listening to a new show with special coverage on the coronavirus pandemic. I'm KP Whaley, Asheville FM's general manager. 2 weeks ago on Friday, May 22nd, Governor Roy Cooper moved us into phase two of the state's COVID restrictions. The phase lifted some restrictions, opened many more businesses, lifted the stay-at-home order. Phase two is expected to last through June 26th, but Cooper says the state must continue to exercise precautions to prevent the spread of COVID-19, which includes the three W's. That is, wear a face mask or a face covering when you go out or around others when social distancing is not possible. Wait at least 6 feet apart when standing in line. Wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds with soap and water. Wearing a face mask has seemingly become a political statement, and sides have been drawn. Or have they? This hour, we're going to discuss the issue with my guest, Thomas Berkland, a professor of public policy in the School of Public and International Affairs at North Carolina State University. Tom is also Associate Dean of Research and Engagement in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. His research focuses on the politics of disaster and how public policy changes. And he is the author of several books, including After Disaster, Agenda Setting, Public Policy, and Focusing Events. Tom Berkland, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Public policy and the politics of disaster. My goodness, your mother must be proud of you, finally.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, I picked a real cheerful topic to make my career.
Well, you couldn't be more qualified to talk about anything we've been experiencing over the past 11 weeks now.
Well, in a way, yes, but in a way, it's different. My book, After Disaster, talks about four different kinds of disasters, earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear power plant accidents, and oil spills. And those tend to be, in one place. The acute phase is fairly short. The ground shakes, and then, or the storm comes, and then you recover from it. But, this COVID thing is a public health thing, a public health crisis. It's an epidemiological crisis or event. And so it's somewhat different than some of the things I've studied, but there are also some similarities.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot just in focusing on the economy that we
right.
may, in fact, by the fourth quarter look pretty swell, at least being on the increase, not better, but things will be skyrocketing forward. Let's go ahead and get into it. Really, starting at the top from the beginning,
sure.
The Trump administration has seemingly been contradicting his health advisors. Governors have been left to kind of decide for themselves and their states what things that they're going to do. Some have sought the advice of health professionals and are getting that. Some are just taking the lead really from Trump. So how in the world can any consistent public policy kind of come out of that?
Well, it's, the question is, taken together, what are all the measures being taken? And even at the federal level, the guidance from CDC about things like hand washing and mask wearing and social distancing. And, so there's kind of what you hear in the press conferences. And I think to some extent people are perhaps discounting what Donald Trump says and are looking more towards more longstanding, higher reputation institutions at the federal level and at the state level. If you look at the public opinion polling, for example, people by and large tend to trust their state governors more than they trust Donald Trump on this issue. Trump's messaging has been inconsistent and in some cases not particularly helpful. But we do have state governments. I mean, that's one of the things people like me study is the notion of federalism. That we have 50 states and the states do things just a little bit differently. Each state does it. And each state has a different situation that, New York's situation is not the same as, say, Wyoming's, for example. But yeah, it's a very challenging situation because, we're learning as we go along. And because the messaging from the very top of the federal government has been inconsistent and sometimes inaccurate.
Right. Do you think the majority of governors then are actually following sound medical advice to set up the policies for their state? Are they caving to politics, or are they listening to reason?
I believe that most of them are trying to do the best they can under the circumstances. Our state, for example, you know, there's a lot of people that were concerned about, say, opening up the restaurants a couple weeks ago, and when we went into phase two. By and large, I think that the reviews of our state, of Governor Cooper, of the public health director, have been all pretty good. There was some concern raised about what happened in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But, one of the issues that's come up is, whether the state-by-state response to this is partisan, right? Whether there's Republican governors are behaving differently than Democratic governors. And it may be more just a notion of style rather than it is of you know, the, there might not be much of a difference in substance that, you know, governors like in Maryland and Massachusetts and Ohio are behaving very similar to governors in, say, North Carolina or Washington State or California. So, at the state level, which is where where most public health responsibility lies, you know, in terms of, you know, delivery of public health services and policies, there may not be a stark partisan difference sort of at the point of delivery as there seems to be, in the daily reports out of the White House.
Yeah. Do you think Governor Cooper's strategy is working, and how do you think he's doing in terms of polling or people's opinion?
I haven't seen any polling data. State-by-state polls are hard to sort of come by. I'm sure there's some out there. I just haven't looked for it. My sense is that people are reasonably happy with what the governor's doing. I know there are some people that want to see it open, things open up more. The legislature has expressed itself several times on this issue. But I think by and large, he's doing a pretty good job. And it would be interesting to try to find some approval, some public opinion data on the approval. The people I talk to anecdotally seem, reasonably happy with the way things are going. There are people that, are protesting things like, the advice to wear masks and whatnot. And we can talk more about that. But, I don't think that's the majority of people.
Yeah, I do want to get to that. Before we do that, let's keep on Governor Cooper.
Sure.
And it does seem like the state legislature has sort of, if you take the example of mail-in voting, have kind of come together as a nonpartisan move for this response to this pandemic.
Yeah, and in that case, if in fact the state goes to mail-in voting, that would be a sort of indication, if you will, that there are some things that are more important than partisanship. And I think in some states there is, in some states there may not be, and some states may be just, really riven with partisanship. And frankly, not allowing people to find alternative ways to vote, has a partisan sort of dimension to it. But the legislature, the thing that struck me was the legislature was, I think, a little upset with the governor's phase two order that bars couldn't open, but the restaurants could. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of bar owners that are like, I have a fairly quiet bar. It's like a big packed nightclub. What makes me much different than a restaurant? So there's a lot of that kind of questions that are being asked. And, this is all new for a lot of us.
Right. And I think the governor's certainly, indicated that he's willing to change his opinion, too.
Yeah.
The breweries are a perfect example.
Exactly.
They were eliminated. They weren't included in phase two. And then I think just out of pressure and reason, they were open because they aren't much different than a restaurant. And I have a feeling, there's this lawsuit regarding the bars or the legislators trying to do something. But I have a feeling Cooper's just going to come around on that.
Well, he may or may not. If for example, a packed bar is not a good idea from a disease transmission perspective, right? You don't want people standing right next to each other, yelling, breathing loud, breathing hard, talking loud. There's some reason to that a bar or more like a nightclub, something like that is probably not something we need around. We know that singing, for example, is very you know, the way people sing, you know, transmits, you know, the breath further, and then can spread, you know, the virus if people are infected.
Yeah.
Having said that, I mean, I think most bar owners, many restaurant owners, you know, are doing everything they can to be safe. I mean, it's not in their business interest to, you know, be the identified as the place where the big outbreak happened. So, and it's interesting along the same lines, you know, as a parallel to that, some churches, you know, the issue is, can churches open? And a church I know of has said, well, we're still not going to do in-person, you know, worship until no sooner than July, because they're concerned about the health of their parishioners, who are generally tend to be older, right? So, you know, there's a lot of individual decision-making by organizations like churches, like restaurants, like all kinds of things, about how to manage risk. And that's what this is about. We're not going to wipe out this virus completely anytime soon, it seems. But what we need to do is manage that risk so that we can have some sort of semblance of normal life while still protecting the health of the most vulnerable.
Yeah, I think our local shopkeepers are in that same boat. And I feel, you know, I'm very proud of them for thinking about the community. There are many folks when they can open, chose not to. They're just not ready.
Right.
They're personally conflicted in terms of, you know, do I want to again be that vector of another outbreak?
No, that's a great point. My barber's the same way. You know, he says he could have opened last Friday. Was it two Fridays ago? I can't remember now. But he didn't. He said, I need a little bit more time to get ready, and, you know, I'm going to wear a mask, and I would like you to wear one. I would appreciate it if you would. And I think most people have been supportive. He's a really good guy, and you know, we don't want to make our barber sick. He doesn't want to make anybody else sick. So, you know, I was talking to some people the other day, and what it boils down to this, I think most people, most of the time, will try to do the best things. Doesn't mean everybody, and it doesn't mean all the time. I'll share an example. I forgot to put my mask on. It was in my car, and I forgot to put my mask on when I went into the Target store down by my campus. Fortunately, it wasn't very crowded, but I saw the workers there with the mask on. I'm like, ooh, geez, I really should have worn a mask.
Right.
So that goes to the most people most of the time will do the right thing. And that will, if in fact I'm right about this, that will help limit, not eliminate, but limit the transmission of COVID.
And at the same time, you want to be careful not to like be shaming people into wearing a mask or not wearing a mask. Your example, you know, had I seen you, you know, if I were to point my finger and start yelling at you, I don't know that you actually do care about this, and you're very well informed about this. But you simply just forgot, and that does happen too. But I would say, and I'd like to move on to talking about this issue, because it seems like when most states, and certainly this one, moved into that phase two, we did see an increase in stupidity, or should I say carelessness. It seems like the media reports of these giant beach parties, and even here in Asheville, tourists were back going to the breweries and not wearing masks. And if you've not been in our breweries, they are much like a nightclub or a bar.
Sure.
And it seemed that even some people were questioning Buncombe County officials' decision to pass a mask requirement if you're indoors. But they waited to pass it until after Memorial Day holiday weekend.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people were thinking, was that kind of on purpose? Because they knew we were going to draw a big crowd on that weekend, and people, you know, have needed it, businesses have needed it. So it just kind of seems like, at least if in the mainstream media, if you're listening, these sort of battle lines are being drawn, and certainly we're used to battle lines here, locals versus tourists, so common here in our city. But how much of that is again, just sort of like everyone was excited to get out finally, or how much of it is flagrant disregard?
Oh, I think that, you know, there are some people that are just going to not behave. I mean, we know there are people that won't wear seatbelts, for example. I mean, there's still people that don't wear seatbelts when they drive. You know, there are some people who smoke. You know, there's all kinds of behaviors that we know are you know, and no, I don't mean to, you know, look, I mean, I have a fondness for red meat, you know. A lot of us, you know, engage in things that are probably, you know, over the long term, you know, not particularly good for us. So I think you're right that there was a little bit of sort of exuberance about, you know, it's Memorial Day weekend, it's summer, we're tired of, a lot of people are working from home, you know, we're kind of tired of being penned up in our houses. And so you can understand that issue. I do think, though, that on the mask issue, that maybe a little more is being made out of it in the news media than exists in reality, in the sense that, you know, news journalism, you know, news stories are stories, right? There are heroes and villains and victims, and there's a plot, there's a narrative, and conflict is a powerful narrative form, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, if a journalist detects conflict over an issue, like somebody disagrees with wearing a mask or something like that, it can start to look like half of the people don't want to wear masks. Mm-hmm. Same thing like with climate change, where, you know, 97% of scientists say, look, you know, climate change is real and it's happening. But you find one, you know, sort of rogue, quote, scientist, unquote, who has come up with some theory saying it's not. And, you know, even if it's debunked scientifically, you know, it's reported as, like, on the one hand, on the other hand. So, like, going back to my point about most people doing the right thing most of the time, nobody wants to catch COVID. I don't think anybody wants to catch COVID. There's some people think, oh, it's just no worse than the flu, right. But it is worse. And so the question is, how do we get the most possible people to comply with things like wearing masks and things like that? And so, you know, saying, look, this, and the last point I'll make on this is that we're not wearing a mask to protect ourselves. We're wearing a mask to protect other people, because that's where the real protective benefit comes from.
Right.
Is if we're asymptomatic, but have it, it protects, you know, it limits the amount that we would, you know, be spreading it to other people. I'm not sure the messaging has been clear as it could be on that, but I think most people, again, would rather not, you know, put their neighbors and their community in danger. In which case, you know, wearing a mask is, you know, seen as a sign of concern or care for your community. And maybe we just need to message that more and say, look, if you care about the nature of your community and the health of your community, you'll wear a mask.
Yeah, let's move into that and talk about some of those mishaps, I think, at the beginning sure. of this pandemic in terms of messaging. Before we do, I just want to remind folks that you're listening to the COVID-19 Update, a new program here on Asheville FM, providing you the impacts that are happening locally because of this pandemic. My guest this hour is Tom Berklin. He's the professor of public policy in the School of Public and International Affairs at NC State University. So on the topic of masks, it seems that early on in the pandemic, even Dr. Anthony Fauci, the administration's top health expert, gave conflicting information about mask use. But then once most hospitals did get their PPEs and got their masks, then the message shifted to say that we should all be considering masks. So what is the general consensus now? You started to talk about that.
Well, I think the general consensus and the health people is that we should be wearing masks. And you know, at the beginning of the outbreak, you know, people were saying, well, do we need to wear, like, you know, the N95 mask, you know, the super high quality mask that filters out, you know, lots of small particles in the air and things like that. And yes, at the beginning, you know, we were concerned about just the regular sort of the kind of mask you would be given at your doctor's office now when you come in, like the kind of mask that you see people wearing, the paper mask, the disposable one. The supplies were thin. There weren't, you know, there was real need at the hospital level, at the clinic level. But now that a couple things have happened, one, you know, there's been a ramp up of production of masks overall. They're not terribly hard to find. And two, the market has responded in a very interesting way. For example, NC State University just announced that their bookstore called Wolfpack Outfitters, that you can buy NC State branded, you know, licensed masks with messages on it, like protect the pack and stuff like that. There's a company in Des Moines, Iowa that I'm very fond of called Rega, and that makes very funny T-shirts. They got into the mask business, and they have masks that say things like a mask is the new smile and stuff like that. They have a very tongue-in-cheek sort of approach to everything. And so now you're seeing all kinds of masks, you know, all kinds of different designs. I was out the other day and somebody had a Star Wars design. I'm not trying to make light of it. I mean, but they're becoming, in a way, a form of self-expression, a fashion statement, right? And for those people who are inclined to wear them and people who are inclined to try to make the best of a bad situation, you know, a mask is, you know, a clever mask might be, you know, an interesting thing. And it also draws attention to the fact that, you know, you're wearing a mask and people can say, oh, yeah, maybe I can get a cool mask. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal. My wife is this morning saying that, you know, it's good that she's got lines on the corners of her eyes so that people can see she's smiling when she's got a mask on, right? Because, I always thought it was kind of endearing that you can tell from her eyes that she's smiling. But, you know, it is tough to wear a mask. And I know that people from certain groups, you know, may think that it makes them look suspicious or something like that, right? And there's some concern about that. And in fact, I'm part of a group that's doing some public opinion polling. And very early days, I haven't really seen the data, but, you know, that's one of the questions we ask. So, your question was, you know, what about masks now? I think the early days were the masks were really needed in the medical environment. But now that we're circulating more freely, you know, because of the phase two and everything, it's best to wear a mask.
Yeah.
And, you know, things have shifted over time. And I think things will change. I don't think we should expect everything to stay the same throughout the course of this pandemic. And advice will change as we go along. And it needs to take into account, you know, new information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should let listeners know that you can pick up an Asheville FM mask.
Cool.
On our website, Asheville FM. Now, we are actually going to be offering a mask during our spring fun drive, which is now going to be our summer fun drive. Starting on June 19th. Stay tuned more for that. But honestly, masks aren't going to save us all. What else is needed?
No. Well, I mean, if you look at the I think it's like the three W's, you know, wear a mask, wait in line 6 feet or more from someone, you know, in a store or other context, and wash your hands, you know. And as we know, hand sanitizer was hard to come by. I ordered a gallon of it early on, and it took about a month or so to show
same,
up.
Same.
And now it's a little easier to come by. And of course, as you know, distilleries and other places have been making hand sanitizer. So it's a little easier to come by than it used to be. So, you know, good sort of hygiene will help. One of the things that hasn't happened is the gyms haven't opened, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably smart. People are saying, well, how am I going to exercise? The things that the advice I've been given are, you know, sports where you're not really in close contact with someone, like golf or tennis, are probably okay. And a football, you know, right now, maybe not. But then also, you know, we've got other things like, we screen people for symptoms. We say, you know, are you symptomatic? Have you traveled recently? You know, and I went to my doctor for a routine visit the other day, and they had a set of screening questions. And if we know that people probably haven't been exposed, they're probably, you know, less likely to transmit it.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's been going on, my mother lives near me. She moved here about 6 years ago from the Pacific Northwest, and she lives in a retirement community, and they're not allowing people in to visit for a while, probably until some sort of effective vaccine is there, just because it's too dangerous. We know that a lot of the outbreaks are in retirement communities or nursing homes and things like that. And so a lot of measures have been taken to, as they say, flatten the curve, right? The goal here is to make sure that we don't have so many cases that it completely overwhelms our healthcare system. And so far, we've been successful in this state of doing just that.
Yeah, although we are hitting some of our top numbers in terms of hospitalizations in the state.
We are, and that's concerning. And I'm wondering whether that's a short-term blip or that's a longer-term trend. But even then, the question is, you know, are the numbers still below a threshold where we should be super concerned about overtaxing hospitals?
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a risk management thing. You know, we don't want to have so many cases for two reasons. One, you don't want to have so many cases that you can't treat the people who get it that need hospitalization. And then the second, you don't want to so overtax the hospitals that people who need treatment for other things can't get needed treatment. You know, the last couple of weeks, our local hospitals have been saying things like, if you think you're having a heart attack, don't hesitate to come to the hospital, because the perception is that hospitals were overwhelmed.
Right.
And they weren't. But I have been watching these numbers, and I am concerned about the hospitalization rates. And we'll just have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and how quickly we move into phase three as well.
Right.
You know, that which is expected to happen in around June 26th. But if these numbers continue to move up, I wonder if Cooper would continue to pay attention to the science, I guess, is my question.
Oh, I think he will. I mean, I think he's shown a pretty strong propensity to follow the science. And I am concerned that we're not going to be able to move to the next phase if these numbers don't start coming down.
Yeah.
Which goes to the back to our point about all those things like masks and hand sanitation, stuff like that. You know, we all have a role to play in doing everything we can to try to minimize community transmission so that we can get to phase three sooner.
Right.
Right. We you know, back to the masks again, the message I've had for people, and most people I know are willing to wear masks, but what I've been saying is that the more of us that comply with this, the sooner we can move on to the next phase, whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't hit those numbers, the governor's going to say, you got to put the foot on the brake and say, nope, we're still not going to open the gyms.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to.
I'm glad you mentioned the gyms, because actually I think I have some friends in Florida and the gyms are opening in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at businesses like bars, they're going to open at some point, phase two, phase
sure.
three, doesn't matter. In the gyms, what do you think should happen when those are ready to open?
Well, I think a number of things should happen. One, I think the operators of those establishments should, you know, make sure that they're following the best possible health recommendations. I don't particularly want to go to my gym when it opens back up right away. I want to see how things go. But I have some faith that they're going to do everything they can to clean and, you know, to make it as safe as possible. Does that mean perfect safety? I don't know. But it's in the interest of businesses to not put their customers and their staffs in any risk. Well, at risk, not, you know, some risk, you know, maybe, you know. The question is, how much risk are you willing to tolerate? But for people who are, say, older or immune compromised or things like that, you know, maybe going to the gym isn't the best idea. You know, we also have individual decisions to make about whether these facilities, these organizations, institutions, whatever, are things we need to be at. You know, my exercise this summer will be riding my bike, either indoors or outdoors, and playing tennis. I'm not going to go to a gym right away because I want to wait to see how things turn out.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are in the same position, even going to a store. I had finally get to my eye doctor, and it happened to be at the mall. And the mall was open, which I was kind of surprised. And walking
right.
around, it's like the vacant mall was open because there certainly weren't
right.
Throngs of people, although there were people without masks and people, you know, young people. But certainly not a crowded space by any means.
Well, and to put a positive spin on that, maybe that means that people are taking a cautious wait and see attitude. I mean, you, for example, went to the eye doctor because it was there, and you know, there are services and things that we're going to need to access. You know, grocery stores, things like that, and you can do things while at the grocery store to mitigate risk. You can, take a wait and see attitude about, say, the gym, things like that. And so there's not going to be this sudden rush of everyone
right.
back. You know, it's not going to be like they threw a switch and everything was like it was, you know, last November. You know, it's going to take some time for everybody to feel comfortable. And that gives us some time to see how, you know, how and whether these kind of establishments are important ways to spread COVID. You know,
mm-hmm.
what if we found out that, you know, restaurants aren't, but bars are, or what if we found that swimming pools aren't, but gyms are, you know,
mm-hmm.
then we've got some decisions to make, but we've got some time to gather that information.
Yeah. Ahead, please.
I just think that what we've got to keep in mind is that for most people, getting COVID is not fatal. But for those people that do get it, that are at risk, it can be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're we're trying to mitigate risk as much as we can.
Yeah, I want to move into the future and talk about policy, sure, that we think we might be see coming. Before I do, I want to take just a real quick break here and remind folks that you're listening to the COVID Update. It's a new program here on Asheville FM, discussing the impacts of the pandemic and how that affects us all locally. I also want to remind folks that programming support is brought to you by the Fine Arts Theater, specializing in art and independent films, as well as special events. They're temporarily closed, but current films are available to watch from their website at fineartstheater.com. Programming support is also brought to you by the Van Winkle Law Firm. The Van Winkle Law Firm is a full-service firm with two locations in Western North Carolina. The firm offers drive-in will signings, conference calls, and video conferences to safely provide clients with legal assistance in this uncertain time. And more information can be found at vwlawfirm.com. And I, again, Tom, I want to talk, and those are perfect examples of changes that have happened in businesses and, right, and in policy in response to this pandemic. And I'm wondering what that future is going to look like, because I think some of these things are going to stay and some of them are going to quickly go away. But before we start talking about that, how long do you think we're going to be sort of living in this new norm that we are right now?
Well, you know, we're going to be living in this new norm until there's a vaccine, I'm thinking. Now, maybe we use other infection control techniques, you know, all the things we've talked about today, and get it down to a low level. But until we get a vaccine, it's going to be hard to, for example, travel, especially overseas. It's going to be a while. Now, that's being said, vaccine, from what I can see, vaccine development is moving on a very fast track. And I think we're going to see a vaccine developed for this thing faster than we've ever seen one before. But that doesn't mean it's going to be next week or next month. I mean, The typical vaccine takes about 10 years to develop. Now, I don't think we're going to be living like this for 10 years, but it's going to take some time, you know. So sometime early to middle of next year, I think maybe things will start to shift. If we get a vaccine that's broadly deployed, it'll go to healthcare workers first, mm-hmm, then it'll go, you know, into the general population, but it's going to be a while. So we have to accommodate ourselves to the new ways of doing business. So, for example, you mentioned in your underwriting announcement a law firm, right? You know, a lot of companies like that, my financial advisor, for example, law firms, things like that, you know, are offering meetings over Zoom or mm-hmm. other teleconferencing, right? And a lot of work is being accomplished in teleconferencing. I've seen data that says that a lot of people really like to work from home. A lot of us are working from home now, and that a lot of people like it and want to continue to be able to do that after this is over. So I wonder if this is going to change the nature of some kind of work, especially professional work that can be done just as easily from home as it could be in an office, and whether that has implications for things like office developments. I mean, are we going to need less office space because you know, more people, more businesses say, I'm going to offer you a job, but you need to do it from home. Mm-hmm. So those might be, you know, interesting and positive changes. We're learning more about how to teach online, for example. Is that positive or not? I believe very strongly in the value of a residential college education, of people being at school to go to college for all the other things that you get from that experience. But for some kinds of training and other sort of events, big professional meetings involving people from all over the country, we may see more of a hybrid model or more of a an online model. And less business travel, perhaps, than there's been done, even after this is over. That's going to have implications for the travel and, mm-hmm. And hospitality industry. On the other hand, I don't think leisure travel is going to, and this is my guess, and this is my crystal ball, leisure travel, I think, will still be important. People will still want to go to places like Asheville and enjoy the things those things have to offer. So, but it's going to be a while before we get to that point. So bottom line, when we get a vaccine, I think things will fully open up. Things will open up more slowly between now and then if we can keep the infection rate under control.
Yeah, and we also kind of have to prepare for that next pandemic too. You know,
we do.
We, you know, and I think that's where I'm thinking things are going to change drastically even after we get the vaccine, even after we're through this immediate pandemic. Before 9/11, you know, air travel in the U.S. was the most open in any country, and it's probably a luxury and a privilege that most of us didn't really understand until you traveled outside the country or until 9/11. Right. So we've been given that comparison about sweeping changes that we can't yet even imagine as we move forward. And I'm wondering if you see things in the future like that. Maybe even a better example is the AIDS epidemic, where again, you mentioned it's going to take a while for a vaccine. They are moving rapidly. I was around in the 80s and seeing no progress being made for HIV and treatment. And now, 30 right. years later, 30 years it's been, they finally have a pill that you can take every day that is almost, 99% effective at yeah. keeping you safe, regardless of what your activity right. is. And so I think I'm just wondering, is that what kind of things are likely significant changes do you see in the future?
Well, I think that the role of the federal government is going to be clarified. I think that there's going to be there's some legislation that's just been introduced to improve the existing federal laws regarding pandemic preparedness. I suspect it's likely that more resources will be devoted to disease surveillance. We know the CDC, for example, had people in China that had been pulled out for whatever reason some time ago. And their job was to monitor, disease outbreaks in China, which for whatever reason is a hotspot for various things like SARS and mm-hmm. and now this COVID coronavirus. I imagine, particularly if the administration changes in the next election, the next administration is going to basically try to plan the way the Obama administration planned for pandemics. Right. And they had, a lot of plans. And frankly, I think a big change would be, if we have a change of administration, would be sort of a sense of leadership from the top. I mean, I don't think we're getting leadership from the top. I think that a lot of people just discount what the president says. A lot of the things the president has said are misleading or wrong. But other people in the executive branch, other people in the federal government have been effective. Dr. Blix, Dr. Fauci, other folks. But I think there's going to be a concerted effort in Congress to see, to investigate what went wrong here. Where did we go astray, if you will, from a disease management perspective, and what can we do to prevent something like this from happening in the future? We've known that this is going to happen for a long mm-hmm. time. This is not news. The idea that this caught people by surprise is problematic, because this has been kind of a nightmare scenario for a lot of people, especially in public health, for decades. And here we are.
Yeah.
And
in fact, we got up pretty easily, in my opinion.
On the one hand, we have more deaths than any other country, and we just passed 100,000 people. More people died this year than will die in automobile accidents just from this, and there's no end in sight. Well, there is an end, but it's sometime in the future.
Right.
Another thing's going to happen that aren't policy related, like medical things. We're already learning all kinds of things about how to treat it in the hospitals. We've learned things about when in respirators really needed, when it's not helpful, mm-hmm. things like that. That's outside my expertise. I'm not a medical professional, but there's all kinds of learning going on that maybe this is what we should talk about. But my research has been about whether a big disaster causes us to learn.
Right.
And I wrote a follow-up book called Lessons of Disaster. And in some cases it does, that there is evidence that policymakers have learned. The question I have in the nature of my research, it takes about 4 or 5 years to really find out these answers. But the question is, will we have learned anything from this? And I suspect we will, but I just don't quite know what that is yet.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, some of those new changes in after 9/11 and in security and in privacy seem to be a direct threat to some. for their personal safety or their freedom. And I think that could be why some folks today are resisting so strongly things like face masks or temperature scans or you know, trackers, you know, on your social medias to track mm-hmm. down the virus. So it seems like we are already in such a politically polarized country. Do you think this pandemic is going to make things even for worse, and to what end?
I don't think that it's going to worsen polarization. You know, some people have said, will it make it better? You know, will we have this? Will everybody come to their senses and say, you know, geez, we shouldn't be so polarized in the face of a threat like COVID? You know, I'm not sure that it's going to, you know, instantly, you know, create this non-polarized sort of period. But I don't think it's going to make it any worse. And if you look at some of the public opinion polling data, you have people saying, you know, yes, I'll wear a mask or no, I won't. And what I found interesting is that, for example, people identify as Democrats will answer pretty consistently, say, you know, I believe in wearing a mask or something. Whereas Republican opinion is kind of mixed, right? So, you know, usually when we see data on polarization, you see like, you know, 20% of Republicans and 80% of Democrats believe one thing mm-hmm. and then the opposite for the other, right? It's not quite that mirror image, right? I don't study political polarization by and large. I'm a political scientist, but that's not what I study. But my guess is that this isn't going to make polarization worse. The question is whether we have the opportunity to overcome polarization and come to some agreement about how things should be done. Even our state legislature here, you know, we've had a lot of polarization in North Carolina. And while the legislature has questioned Governor Cooper's, you know, moves in a lot of ways, they haven't been quite aggressive.
Resistant,
it hasn't been as pointed as it's been in the past. And I think that the legislature, to their credit, realizes that the governor's trying to do the best he can too. So is it going to, you know, usher in this wave of you know, nonpartisanship and, you know, good feelings and we're all in it together? I don't think so. But is polarization going to prevent us from learning from this? I don't think so. I think we are going to get something out of this in terms of improved policies and improved systems for dealing with pandemics. A lot depends on the outcome of the next election.
To see
whether or not we can actually, you know, implement that learning.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you, Tom. I'm wondering, and I know you can't predict the future, are thinking that we might learn from this and make policy, smart policy decisions afterward. But any sort of message of, you know, hope in terms of where we're going to be on the other end of this?
Yeah, I think we're going to be fine. I mean, I shouldn't say fine. I mean, 100,000 people or more will die, maybe 250,000 by the time this is all over. But will we emerge from this on the other side? Yes. One way or the other, we will emerge. We are doing everything we can. One sign of hope is that, you know, a lot of the economic disruption has been because we've made a conscious decision to shut the economy down to protect people. And that's an interesting impulse. And you know, that'll go down in history as a community saying, you know, look, we care about people that are vulnerable to disease. You know, this matters. You know, we want to, you know, help these people as much as we can. So that's a positive thing. But a vaccine, based on all the science I've seen, a vaccine is very likely to be developed. Effective treatments are very likely to be developed. And we'll get to the other side of this in a year or two. Probably more like 2 years, but we will get past it. It's not going to be like this forever. Things will change, but it's not going to be. The gyms will someday open. The bars will someday open. We'll be able to go on vacation someday, and we just need to work for that. Work to hasten the day that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Berkland, a professor of public policy in the School of Public and International Affairs at North Carolina State University. Also Associate Dean for Research and Engagement in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences. His research focuses on politics of disaster and how public policy changes, and author of several books. Tom Berklin, thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Thank you.